Farpoint Media.
Deadpan
stalks the streets as a scientist human transplantation experiment runs amok.
Deadpanite.
Zombies.
The Energizer Bunny. And Amy Bowen.
Star in one of the most frightening horror films ever made. Watch in terror, scream in fright, thrill to breathless excitement as these
deadpan
zombies strike blindly at living flesh. Watch as the blood flows and splatters the screen. The beautiful, voluptuous, deadly, vicious
Amy Bowen.
A woman who would stop at nothing to gain control over the
deadpan
zombies, whose creed was
deadpan, deadpan, deadpan.
Watch as the vicious
Energizer Bunny
tortures her victim.
Come on. Who are you?
Between them, they created a blood-soaked reign of terror to stagger the imagination. Watch the
deadpan
zombies. You will die a thousand deaths as you watch
Jack Mangan's Deadpan Podcast.
All right, everybody, our deadpan interview for this week is someone who you've actually been hearing pretty much since Deadpan's beginnings, although you've never really realized it. But I want to thank, actually, right now, what this guy's doing, his claim to fame at the moment, is he's the kind of the editor-in-chief and the mastermind behind the Metal Asylum website, which is www.metalasylum.net. And so I'm good friends with this guy and his brother and a lot of mutual friends we have in common, and his name is Rich Catino. Hey, Rich, thanks for coming on my show and talking to me.
What's up, Jack? Good talking to you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, you know, Rich, you and I go way back, and we've been talking the metal and kind of talking about metal and its place in the world and
right.
the good metal bands for years. And it's been now 2010, I mean, right off the bat, before... We definitely have to talk about, you know, your site and everything, but right off the bat, let's talk about the year 2010 for the metal world.
Okay.
It's been, it's been a hell of a year. I mean, there's been a lot of landmark things happening. I mean, well, let's start with the good news. This year, I think for thrash metal especially, which is, you know, going back to the 80s and everything, that was probably my favorite flavor, but you've got this concert right now that no one would have ever thought possible. You've got the Big Four
right
over there in Europe, which is Metallica and Megadeth, which to getting the two of them, you know, all those haters together on the stage together is a miracle. But then you've also got
right.
Anthrax and Slayer, which is arguably the Big Four of thrash and heavier metal since metal progressed from Maiden and Priest. So what other kind of exciting things are going on right now in 2010?
Well, there's a lot of good tours coming through for the States. I've seen several so far. I saw Hammerfall, Creator, and a couple of smaller bands like Voivod and this great new thrash band from America. They're called Lazarus AD, played with them. And then before this Big Four tour happened, there was supposed to be the Megadeth Slayer Testament thing that is happening now in the summer because it was rescheduled because of, you know, Tom Araya's back problem.
Right.
So before that, well, actually after that got canceled, then rescheduled, Megadeth, Testament, and Exodus actually went out. So they did their own little run. So I saw that. That was a nice little three-pack, you know, which is kind of tied into the Big Four, you know?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, Exodus and Testament they usually opened for the Big Four on tour. You know, back in
right.
the 80s, back in their real prime of popularity.
Right. And what else? Wasp. You're a fan of Wasp, aren't you?
I've seen Wasp. I've seen Blackie. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was a very good show because their new record's really good, and the tour that they're doing right now is really cool because they have a big video screen behind the drum kit, and they play all the old videos to coincide with their performance. So it's like all in real time. So whenever whatever Blackie's saying, if you watch the video, he's saying the same thing at the same time. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, I should qualify. When I saw Wasp, it was the early 90s, and it was the Fast Lane, which I know I'm pretty sure is not there anymore. It's the Fast Lane in Asbury Park, where I was standing about 10 feet from Blackie Lawless. You know,
so you probably saw them for, if it's the early 90s, for the Crimson Idol, maybe?
At the time, their big hit was they did a cover of The Who's The Real Me for a movie. So that was a big deal. That's when I saw Wasp.
All right, so that was maybe... Maybe you saw them for that tour, for the Headless Children, then.
Possibly, yeah. You know, a friend of mine's band actually got an opening slot for them, so that's how I ended up there. But you know, they put on a great show. It was great to hear all the old stuff. You know, Wild Child and Love Machine and
I Want to Be Somebody.
Yeah, and I don't. You know, honestly, I don't remember if they played "I Fuck Like a Beast" or not. But I sure hope they did.
I could say maybe they didn't because when Blackie was doing that tour for Headless and for Crimson Idol, depending on which one you went to. I don't think they were doing that because it was a different Wasp at that time. You know, there was the Wasp from the 80s that was more the shock and the blood and the gore and him drinking the blood out of the skull and that. And then when he got into the 90s and he did Headless and Crimson Idol, he took a different approach to it. And he took out all the stage theatrics and he did more of a straight-ahead show, you know, because the records were they were different from the first four Wasps, you know what I mean?
Right. It's true that the Headless Children, that was more about, you know, that you had like these 8-minute epic songs where there was actually some really, there was some structured songwriting going on there. It wasn't just...
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Headless Children and Crimson Idol are just amazing pieces of work if you actually listen to the words and the music in it. Two of my favorite Wasp albums behind the first one. I love the first one. Beginning to end, it's just perfect. But Headless and then Crimson Idol are a close second, easy.
All right, but you know what, Rich? I got to cut you off because this is the problem whenever we talk is that we go down these detours and we start talking about, like, we'll just obsess over one band for 10 minutes. So,
yeah.
But, you know, you actually, you touched on something that I wanted to touch on, which... I didn't have a structure to this interview or conversation or anything, but
right.
Let's talk a little bit about that. I mean, what do you think? What is it about metal? You know, throughout the ages. I mean, whether you talk about Alice Cooper in the '60s or Sabbath, there's always been this kind of sci-fi and horror and occult connection. You know, and like you said, Blackie Lawless, they did it up with. There was a lot of stage antics. Well, Kiss, of course, are really famous for this stuff. But you know. Explosions and blood and skulls. I mean, what do you think it is about the more cult stuff in horror and science fiction genres that kind of connects with heavy metal music?
I guess for me at least, it was just easy because when you're young, it's something that's so dangerous and something that your parents want you to avoid. So when you get it, and you see it, you know, like when you see your first horror movie or you hear, you know, Wasp or early Motley Crue, you know, for the first time, like when we were growing up, it's so, you know, visually interesting and it's all the things that your parents are telling you that you shouldn't be looking at. So it instantly gets your attention. Plus, I think, you know, there's a crossover too. A lot of monster movie fans and comic books and superheroes and all that kind of stuff. All those fans are usually metalhead fans because a lot of that content is in the music of metal. So it's like a, you know, the two genres kind of combined together and you just have, you know, fans that are fans of both.
Right. And I think that's also, in my opinion, that's why metal and classical, there's a lot of interweaving there because both genres, they're not afraid to kind of go out and sometimes get into darker material and explore and use the tri-note, which actually is sometimes called the devil's note,
right.
You know, and use dissonant sounds and turn dissonance into music, into melody. And I think
absolutely
that does go hand, in my opinion, that goes hand in hand with some of the stuff that, you know, I've always thought, and I'm not going to talk the whole time here, but I've always thought some people, you know, they might love Shakespeare, but they might really love the bloody stuff. They might really love Macbeth. Yeah. You know, maybe they don't like A Midsummer Night's Dream as much or As You Like It. Maybe they really like bloody Macbeth or bloody Shakespeare. And, you know, I think it's the same way with metal. And it doesn't mean that this stuff is perverse or deranged. It just means that, you know, it's okay to like something that's a little bit darker, I think, and a little bit edgier sometimes.
Yeah. And plus, too, if you think about it, it's the music itself is boundaryless, really. That's what makes it so appealing, too. You know, you can get, you can listen to, you know, like the LA bands, like Rat and Motley Crue and Dokken and all that, you know, those guys. And you're getting more, you know, fun, sex, drugs, rock and roll kind of stuff. And then you can listen to Overkill and Testament and Megadeth, and you get something else out of it, more like politics and government and social things and all that stuff. And then you can do whatever, Iron Maiden and Judas Priest, and you get more history and things like that. And then you can go to, I don't know, Stradivarius and Gamma Ray. And then you're going to, you know, things from outer space and self-empowerment songs, you know, uplifting things. So it's a whole spectrum, you know, that they call it, they all cover.
True, right. And you know, and you got Van Halen thrown in the mix, which is the least doomy band I can think of. You know, they're so upbeat and happy, but you know, they're still thrown in with the same category as like Dimmu Borgir, you know, and bands that are just all about, you know, about the darker things in imagination.
Right. Well, Van Halen's part of that whole Rat and Dokken thing. It's all the sex, the girls, the backstage debauchery, all that kind of stuff, which is all part of, you know, being into this music too. It's the hot chicks, you know?
Yeah. You know, that always kind of rubbed me the wrong way when, you know, not that there's anything wrong with, you know, going out and meeting girls, especially, you know, when we were younger guys and, you know, and everything, but, you know, that always bugged me when you'd hear Ricky Rocket say like, I'm in this for the chicks. Like, I don't care about making good music or any of that stuff. I want to meet, you know, it's like, well, okay.
Right. I think a lot of them said that too. And then, you know, when it comes down to it, when you really listen to their songs, they were really bent on making good songs. I mean, if they were doing something like, you know, Gigi Allen or something, it was going to be seen as garbage anyway. It wasn't going to last.
I think in a way, I mean, you know, I know that everyone's upset about Bret Michaels has had some trouble and everyone's feeling, know, and honestly, I you and I might disagree on the subject and I don't. I just think Poison is garbage, and I think most of us recognize that. Most of us look back on a lot of those bands from the '80s and say, "Well, you know, there was a good song here and there, but mostly this was just commercial crap. This is like country music, except they had screaming lead guitars instead of twangy guitars, and they wore eye makeup instead of cowboy hats."
Well, I think you're not giving them the benefit of the doubt, because if you listen to the first Poison album, the first White Lion, the first couple Europe records, the first Great White. If you listen to a lot of those bands, their first few records, they're a little bit harder and a little heavier than what they became when they became a little more commercial, when they got to a bigger label, they had bigger videos, they made ballads, you know?
Yeah.
So their sounds in the beginning for the first couple records were definitely a little edgier and a little harder than what they became. Same thing with Bon Jovi, the first couple Bon Jovi records, same thing goes for them.
Yeah, and he's kind of the face of horrible metal. I mean, he's the ambassador for crap, you know, for sellout commercial crap. But I was certainly into that album. But you know, and I will give big shout out to that first White Lion album. That was
great.
I really loved that album.
Fight to Survive is great.
And that was before, you know, When the Children Cry, which actually is not a terrible song. I don't want to beat up on White Lion, but you know, they certainly did. They went the glam kind of sellout route. But But you know, whatever.
But they still had their hard songs too, you know. And even though Poison did get much more commercial sounding, because the first record is a little edgier than the few ones that came after it, the songs that they came out with, that a couple of them were hits, were really, really great songs, especially like Something to Believe In. And Every Rose Has Its Thorn, a couple of those songs, especially I think Something to Believe In is really a really good song.
What
they're singing about, I think, you know, I think those guys, they didn't get the credit that they were due for some of the songs they did right. you know?
Well, this is why, you know, you're the metal ambassador. You know, I'm a little bit less, I'm a little less forgiving of, you know, commercial ballads and all that stuff. But that's, you know, again, this is why you're the man behind metalasylum.net. So
thanks, man. Thanks. It's but, like, what was the other one I told you about? Oh, you got to listen to, especially all your listeners, you got to go pick up Winger's third record. It's called Pull. It's so good. It's so underrated. It's not tongue-in-cheek kind of, you know, poppy metal like 17 was. It's not like that. You can still, you can still tell it's Winger, but there's more of an edge to it. There's a couple songs on that that are really surprise you. There's a couple acoustic songs on there. It's definitely a much more mature Winger, and I think don't think it never got the, you know, respect it should have gotten.
So you just completely lost everybody now with you know, and again, I haven't heard of the third Winger, so I'm not gonna knock something I have not heard, but you know,
you guys got to check it out. It's great. It's one of my favorite records of all time.
Really? And what year did that one come out?
93, I think, right around when grunge started coming around.
Okay.
Same thing with the third Warrant record, Dog Eat Dog. It's another solid album.
I also remember what was kind of cool about that was that the punk band named Dog Eat Dog.
Yeah.
They named their album Warrant in response.
That's another good one. I highly recommend it.
Now, all right. Well, now let's win some skeptics back, though.
Okay.
But now, first, actually, before we talk about other bands, and there's plenty more to talk about, and we haven't even really pimped your site enough yet. But okay. we need to do all this before we're out of here. But I do want to play you something. I got a hold of this piece of music, which is like, I want to play it live, and hopefully the microphones will pick it up. Can you still hear me?
Yep.
All right. Cool. This is actually one of the best twin guitar attacks I think I've ever heard. So I want you to check this out and tell me what you think of this. All right.
Okay. Oh my God. Make it stop. Oh my Lord.
Now what do you think of that?
Oh my God. Oh my God. I don't know what to say. That was weird. That was when me and you were the Murray and Adrian Smith of rock and roll.
That's right. Or of Matt Mango's basement, at least.
Right.
Yeah. What? I mean,
oh
that,
my God.
Now I got to tell, you know, my listeners, actually, a lot of my friends and listeners out there love that song. I've gotten such great feedback. And you all do need to know, Rich Catino. One night I showed up for practice late, you know, and Rich was there with Matt Mango and the rest of the guys, and I came in the basement, and they were just, the place was electric, and everyone in the basement, but we had like 14 people in the band at that point, and they're all like, oh my God, you got to hear this new song from Rich's riff, and it was, and that's good stuff, though. I had to unleash that.
Holy shit. I haven't listened to that in 8 years.
Oh, you got to. I'll send you the MP3.
I got the album.
Yeah. Really, you got? I heard that's a good album.
It's pretty good. It's different. It's got different sides to it. That's definitely the most unique side on the record. There's nothing else like it on there.
I would say our other song on that album called "The Picture Picture on the Wall."
Yeah.
Jeez. It's called "Picture of You." Jeez. Okay. Sorry, Matt. But yeah, "Picture of You." That was also kind of a – I mean, I think the whole album is good, but I think those were the two that were kind of like almost metal songs. They were kind of hard rock songs.
Yeah, they were definitely hard rock songs. That was cool. That was fun doing that stuff.
And the best memory – and as you heard Rich and I saying, is that Rich's brother was actually our bassist. And Rich's brother is not so much the metal guy, but Rich and I would start busting – like my favorite of this type of memory of the basement is Rich and I would start playing the riff to the Motley Crue song "Looks That Kill."
Looks That Kill, yep.
And his brother would just get on the microphone and start screaming the words, you know.
Oh, that was great.
And it was all pure. He was mocking Rich and me completely. He was not enjoying the song. He was doing it.
No, he did. He was actually a Motley Crue fan.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, he was definitely a Motley Crue fan.
Okay, so yeah, I got the impression that we were being mocked. Which would have been okay.
He was trying to do the best Vince Neil impersonation he could do.
yeah. That's awesome, and everyone should know that's how Rich and I kind of jammed together, you know, and that's how I ended up actually doing some reviews for metalasylum.net. But there's more than, so I mean, that's another way that, you know, people out there who know me are familiar with the website, because that's
right.
I've directed people there to check out my reviews and check out the news. But I mean, let's talk a little bit about that. I mean, we got to pimp Metal Asylum. What's it all about?
It's all about covering what's going on in the world of heavy metal music and hard rock. There's a page for CD reviews, digital downloads, which is a lot of reviews now are. They're not even CDs anymore. They're digital downloads. DVDs, there's a concert page, interview page, there's tour dates, there's festivals, and I put festival news up there from festivals around the world. There's an audio video page, so there's sometimes I'll put like an old video up there, sometimes I'll put new music up there from a band that's got some new stuff coming out. Like, hopefully I'm going to put one of our favorites up there very soon, the new Nevermore.
Nice. Yeah, excellent. I know we've got some Nevermore fans around Deadpan.
There's a features page. There's different types of articles on there you can read. There's a store where you can buy music that you like, that you've read a review at the Asylum, and then you can go to that page and you can purchase it from there. And what else we got? There's news. There's a contact page. And that's pretty much, that's everything. There's a couple links to our MySpace pages. There's my page, and then there's the album wing as well. So it's we keep pretty busy.
Right.
I should say.
The album page is for Kevin Albanowski, who's one of the one of your major writers, and you have a couple other guys on the staff. So it's not just you just sitting in your basement putting up you're putting up a WordPress site. I mean, this is professional metal journalism, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, we deal with all the record labels. I get on, thankfully I get on most of the guest lists for shows that come through town. I put my writers on them as well, so they get to review shows and take pictures. There's, I think, 8 active writers on the site that do media reviews. And we also, which is great, we have Mark Roman from Brave Words and Bloody Knuckles magazine. He does a lot of writing too, so it's, I'm thankful for the attention the website gets and the respect it gets,
I mean, Blabbermouth has become one of the better names, but, I think it's Metal Asylum is right up there with Blabbermouth and with the other guys.
Thanks. I mean, we've put a lot of time and effort into making it almost as good as, those. I mean, they're that and Brave Words are, they've been around longer than me, and they're bigger sites with more writers, but quality-wise, I think, and our knowledge of the genre and all the bands, I think we're definitely up there with those kind of sites.
I would absolutely agree. And you and I, something else you and I talked about recently, I'd say, you had that interview that you had with Bobby Blitz, who's the front man of the thrash band Overkill. I'd say, really, there was a real connection there. And I think that's, of course it's the Jersey thing, but I think, guys, that was really solid. I mean, you won't find a better Bobby Blitz interview, I think.
Thanks, man.
And it was good stuff. And, of course, that's a band that you and I have geeked about over the years. I mean, this is a thrash. And actually, just really quick, just a quick deviation on that is that it was funny that you pointed out just how this album, their latest album as of 2010, their album Ironbound was kind of it was like they had turned a corner, and he didn't even seem to notice. He was just like, oh, yeah, we have a new album out. What's the big deal? And you were saying, you were kind of had the same reaction that the rest of the metal world who's heard it has had. Like, wow, you guys are back,
right.
This is a great stuff. And he's like, yeah, whatever, new album.
And they've put out, good albums over the past, like I said in my review, there's been good albums over the past like 14 years, and there's been good songs on those albums, I think. But from beginning to end, as a whole album, I think Ironbound is, like I said, I thought it was the best one since either WFO or Horoscope.
We'll be right back. say, I love you, I need you in every way. It's your touch, you move me, my dream and divine. You clouded in your edge as my silver. Distance, persistence, we are flowers that bloom. Your silence, you glisten, yeah, you light up the room.
Oh, my light is dimming away. So please don't get in my way. Don't you know that flowers don't bloom? For they lose their perfume. It's like a love is fading away.
Loveless and your eyes are blind to the kindness, love-filled spirit of mine. You are hardened and rigid, and you're as cold as ice. Flying away, yeah, I'm leaving tonight.
Oh, but our love is flying away. Tonight, you're going away. So what if I ask you to stay? My love is, your love is, our
ignorant simp.
The preceding program is part of the Farpoint Media family of podcasts. To find out more about Farpoint Media and the many other podcasts available, visit www.farpointmedia.net. A world of audio wonder awaits you there.